Welcome, post gamers, and the few of you who snuck through when this was briefly a public show. Patreon.com/LeftReckoning, if you're so inclined. The Carpenters thing had me thinking about my time on construction sites. Never in sort of construction per se, but my father is a salesman for telecommunications equipment, so I would, for summer jobs, install in newer buildings. And that thing about the carpenters working in those $1 million homes and $1 billion homes, and then, you know, having to like take meager wage increases, very interesting to me. Like, I didn't get to work in anything like that. Most of the clients were like hospitals and the National Guard ones, which is interesting to be around guys in a costume. Yeah. But I don't know if you have any job experience like that, but I'm fascinated by that kind of.
I worked concrete for a while. Right. So I was there like laying foundations and stuff. And
reminds me of my one of my favorite paintings, Gustave Caillebotte. He's got a series. I can't remember exactly what the French name for this is, but the Carpenter's one is what I always remember. But it, and I like, my favorite like sort of messages are from people who listen to my content while they're working on a job site like that, because that's anytime I've done manual labor, it's and the types of where you're able to listen to be so like, that's the type of freedom when I when I've been paid to like be doing landscaping and I can actually like listen to podcasts and stuff like that, like I love that sort of freedom at work to like sort of improve yourself or something like that. But anyway, so that's been on my mind since we talked about that story.
It is so like telling too, like this, the stories you hear like from Nabisco workers or folks at Amazon to the carpenters, like all these jobs are very, very different. Don't get me wrong, but the fundamental like complaints and like ways that people are lining up and sort of struggling, it's frightening to see how similar they are across the country, particularly in relation to like the Seattle, which is that in Washington regarding the carpenters, is like people just not being able to live where they work anymore.
Yeah.
And that's like, that's going on everywhere. It's just frightening that that's like the reality in the United States right now, that pretty much everybody is having similar conversations. And like, obviously like there's cities that are worse than others, but for the most part, it's like things are just not affordable.
Yeah. So I was just resetting my focus.
No. I'm happy. We're worried about you.
Get a little bit hazy. that Cucker Tarleson. Thanks for the heads up.
Good username.
So let's get to a side dish first. We were going to play this last week, but in light of our conversation about climate change and serious ways to address it, our friend Dennis Prager has some something to say here that we maybe should have posed to the guys. Here we go. Here's Dennis Prager talking about climate change.
Most people, even college has not fully knocked this out of people, most people do assume that it is innate to women to want to have a child, to want to have children. So when a woman says, I don't want children because of a certain issue, I don't know if people judge her harshly. I do. I think she's an idiot. But it's not most people are judging her harshly. It's that most people are just confused. Why do I think she's an idiot? Because I don't believe for a nanosecond that the world is on the verge of extinction due to global warming. It is one of the many, many lies that people who with college degrees believe. That's all it is, my friends. I don't deny the world is getting warmer. Did you know, for example, that far more people to this day die of freezing than of warm climate?
Many die of warm.
There is a solution to warm climate. It's called air conditioning.
Right.
It's very effective. Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut over the lead.
Don't speak over the master.
Warm climate. Did you know that there is a solution to warm climate? It's called air conditioning. It's very effective. Anyway.
It's effective if you got it. Like, for instance, if let's say climate change causes an extreme weather event that knocks out all of the power in your area, and you're stuck in a dark stairwell for hours and hours at a time, and you're an elderly woman. I mean, not that it matters, but I'm just talking about a specific story in that, I think, the New York Times. Like, yeah, air conditioning. It'd be nice in a situation like that. We're already seeing, look, civilization might not entirely collapse, right? We might get through this without civilization entirely collapsing, just with, like, you know, some sort of feudalistic, you know, the Walmart football team plays the Amazon football team type of thing. Yeah, I don't know, David. Go. I lost my.
No, I mean, you're right. It's. I mean, let me just get serious for a second, then we can have some fun with it. It's so despicable to see him saying that. This clip is a few weeks old. So when this clip was recorded and when he was going live, as he was speaking, there were dozens of folks in New Orleans, elderly folks, who were being cooked alive because the electricity system failed there because the climate change denying fossil fuel loving utility corporation Entergy completely failed at being able to provide people with the electricity, meaning that all these people who were stuck from another extreme weather event in New Orleans were literally dying, right? It's so out of touch and so despicable. Beyond that, you know, you can make all these points with, like, one, that's not a solution, right? Here in Texas, right, where it's a place you definitely need air conditioning, right? It's a place that every house has it, right? It's not like places in the Pacific Northwest, which have suffered immensely lately because, you know, weather has gotten more extreme and their summers have gotten hotter and people are dying because they just literally don't have it. Here, you know, we get messages from our power providers telling us that we need to turn down the AC or else the entire grid will collapse again. Right. It's just like, we're just not even like, it would be one thing. It's like one thing to, like, tell him that that's an absurd and nasty ass thing to say in general. But it's like, also, like, our public infrastructure is already failing at you know, providing, you know, resiliency in our air conditioning systems here. But of course, like, this is like where you can get into a trap dealing with these right wingers. I mean, the claim that what we're talking about with climate change is just that it's getting a little bit warmer in the summer. It's just absurd. To note, for example, that people are dying of freezing, as if that has nothing to do with climate change, is just another example of the game that they're playing.
Housing policy.
Yeah. I mean, they're just, like, moving things around, right? It's like, well, no, global warming means that because we're trapping more heat into the earth and into the globe, that it's making weather events in the winter and in the summer much more volatile and irrational, right? It's not that the world is just getting hotter and hotter and hotter every year, in the sense that, like, you know, your winters are going to be warmer. No, it just means that weather events are just much more volatile and unpredictable, because the weather systems that, you know, the climate, the way that this world functions, the way that our ecosystem functions, is completely out of whack with itself.
Yeah. I don't doubt that prospects for the future are driving people not to have kids. I think I just want to address this, though. I think the main reason we're not seeing a lot of kid having is things like cost of living and wage stagnation and those sorts of secular stagnation issues. And I think the climate thing is kind of a seductive rationalization for folks that, even for myself, like, you might subscribe to, because, like, honestly, I think if most people had the means to, like, to buy a house and to, you know, all this sort of stuff, then that climate change stuff starts looking like not such a hurdle. It only looks like a hurdle when the other fundamentals aren't so sound.
No, man, I think you're, like, that's random. Thanks for bringing that up, because I agree with Prager on one thing, that it is a problem if people are saying that they don't want to have kids. I think that there's something, I disagree with his kind of like biological reading about it.
Yeah, of course,
about
yeah.
like how women like need to want to have kids. Of course, that's ludicrous and sexist and nasty. But as a human civilization, right, it's like that's systemic failure right there. If you're seeing the majority of, or like large portions of the youth in your society saying that like, no, I don't think that I can have a child. Right, that's people opting out on a mass scale. Yeah, that to me signals a really big problem with society, and I take that seriously. Unlike someone like Prager, who's just trying to use it as like a cudgel to just like encourage his insane fan base to attack folks, I take it very seriously. That's why I support things like.
Yeah, he'll use it as a cudgel because it's a frankly a threat to him and his entire worldview.
Yeah, because people, conservatives like that, they use child poverty as a weapon, right? The fact is that in this country, if you have a child and you don't have means, you are very quickly entering into a situation that is of an even higher precarity than other folks are in. And people are already extremely precarious, right? Like if you have the responsibility to not only take care of yourself in an economy where like most working class people just can't afford to rent a, you know, one bedroom apartment, let alone feed a child and take care of all the expenses that come with that. You put yourself into, you know, you find yourself in a situation that is extremely desperate. And that's why, you know, trying to find programs that can help alleviate child poverty are really critical. But it's also why conservatives like it. Why? Because it means that working people are much more desperate in the workplace. They're much less likely to say no. They're much less likely to stand up for their rights because they have that kind of disciplining threat over their head. Yep. Right, is that, you know, if you lose your job and become destitute, if you lose your job and are unable to, you know, to provide income for yourself, we've slashed the social safety net so much in this country that you have a very serious reason to fear for the life of your child. Right, it's a very, very powerful bargaining chip for bosses to have.
Yeah, as the Reverend said, sort of in the era of Malthus that we talked about with Peter Lindbaugh, hunger will tame the fiercest animals. And that never went away. Name the year that went away.
No.
Yeah. All right. All right. Well, let's move to the main event here. As long as we get David back.
So I need to make sure people can see my beautiful face.
So we have what is going on. Basically, what's going on with the IDW is what's going on with the ice shelf. It's starting to accelerate the breakup. A breakup that I think sort of started, ironically, with some Sam Harris stuff where he said that Charles Murray was the most maligned man of his, unfairly maligned man of his lifetime. And it also, I think, started to crack when it was solidified by the New York Times in that weird photo shoot where all these guys are like jumping out of bushes.
Barry Weiss wrote that story too.
Yes, the Barry Weiss piece, which like also like you see Michael Shermer coming out of a bush, and if you look up some of the things that Michael Shermer's been involved in, you'll this is not for now, but some irony in him hiding in the bushes. Anyway, I want to focus now on Sam Harris criticizing the guy who tried to fire me. That's I think what he'll be on his tombstone a long time from now. The guy who tried to fire Matt Leck, Brett Weinstein. So here's Sam Harris in his Ask Me Anything 18. And he's about 3 minutes into an answer where one of his fans is like, why don't you guys just sit down and you can hash this out, and in, you know, the very, I would say, naive way that this fan base is sort of takes these exercises. And Sam Harris is like, no, he's too much of a lying charlatan. And I want to play a little bit of that now before we go into, I think, maybe even more a funny one.
Variants. And again, ignoring the fact that natural immunity is also doing that. And it's curious that Brett and Heather are not seeing that because, again, they run everything through the logic of evolution.
This is about a you know what, let's skip a little bit ahead actually, because we want to avoid some of vax stuff. Just
with variants has anything to do with vaccination?
Anyway,
seems a little bonkers, because the biggest problem, the Delta variant, emerged in India and became prevalent there.
I can't explain what's happening, though. Basically, Brett Weinstein saying some BS about evolution of the virus after the vaccine. It's a complete fabrication, and Sam Harris is calling out about that. It's a fabrication that other people are peddling recently, but we won't get into that either right now.
Conditions where exactly no one was vaccinated. We know that the emergence of Delta has nothing to do with our vaccination regime. The whole thrust of their comments there is confused, right? And once again, the subtext to everything they're saying, no matter how reasonable and attentive to caveats they can seem, and I will grant you, they can seem incredibly reasonable. They do not seem like Alex Jones. And this is why what they're doing is so insidious. But the basic message, the basic implication of everything they say, and the apparent reason behind everything they're saying, is the belief that these COVID vaccines are dangerous, and you should be worried about them. You should be profoundly...
That is a very clear crystallization of how to read, I think, these sorts of, I call them crypto-reactionary media figures. They have some sort of project where there's all, like Sam Harris says, all the nuance in the world, all the caveats, all the buyer beware, all the, you know, consult your own medical doctors, all this and that. But the fundamental underlying, the base note of that, if you do, just disregard the lyrics for a second, is be afraid of the vaccine. And it's horrible. And Sam Harris is right to not want to be associated with it. As we pointed out before, a similar thing was going on with the base note of Sam Harris with regards to if you should welcome Muslims to your community for the last like 20 years. But it's nice that he can recognize this in Brett Weinstein. Now, I want to shout out Logic Guy for this tweet, which is where the next portion of this comes from. Logic Guy, if you want to hear a convo from two guys who just discovered, like, two, I want to like be a little bit charitable here, because these two fellas, look, they still think Sam Harris has a lot to say about the Middle East. They're on a journey, okay? And what I think what's interesting about this is not a a problem of intelligence or anything like that. This is just an ideological issue. Go on. Yeah.
No, I mean, I was just going to say, I was never a Sam Harris fan, but the first couple of times I saw his stuff, I wasn't immediately like, you know, running in the opposite direction. We're all on a journey. Yeah.
And what's interesting about that is the way they talk about Harris is similar to how we would talk about Hitchens. And in that, like, he might take these positions, but he has a breadth of knowledge. And I frankly do not see that in Sam Harris. That's where I disagree with these chaps.
Yeah, I do too.
But anyway, what's entertaining is them coming to the, like, basically, like I said, the scales falling from the eyes of this, of Brett Weinstein.
Yeah. Let's do it. One idea I had is we could talk about the Weinsteins or the Weinsteins for like 10 minutes, just because I'm honestly curious what you think of this whole fucking.
We should totally talk about that. Yeah, okay. Fuck yeah.
I don't even know what to make of this, but okay, yeah. Obviously, so Eric and Brett, it's Weinstein, right?
People say both, but Weinstein. Yeah.
So Eric and Brett, you know, they're famous brothers, and I think like most people, I was made aware of them probably like 2 years ago-ish. I don't know if it was via Sam Harris or some other mechanism, but they were like in that whole IDW crowd. And, you know, Eric was a physicist, you know, Brett's the biologist, and they had both been on the Sam Harris podcast, Joe Rogan, etc. And they were interesting.
I don't think Eric is a physicist. I think he's a mathematician that claims that he has breakthroughs in the field of physics that are worthy of a Nobel Prize. So it's an easy mistake to make.
That
people, right? And, like, No, Brett was caught up in the hole.
I didn't mean to do that one.
We've done videos, right, of him making those claims.
The MVP one. Maybe I need to resurface that one. I need to curate a Weinstein thing. Now that I'm pretty sure he's not going to sue me, because frankly, he has to worry about maybe his own lawsuits with the amount of his a lot of families that wish that their family member have got vaccinated instead of listening to his dumbass.
Well, Evergreen scandal. Eric was like, he had some interesting credentials as like sort of a young genius in like math and physics, right? I think he went to UPenn, graduated in 3 years, went to Harvard, got a PhD like very quickly, but had like a learning disability he talks about and stuff. So, and also like is able to generate these epic storylines for as narrations for like cultural events that I think are it's kind of intoxicating. Like he has this ability, the storytelling ability, to like tie events together and narrate them in certain ways and bring the focus onto certain aspects of the problem that you had missed and like come up with acronyms that describe things. And like a lot of people, I was like, oh, this seems like a smart guy, you know? And you know
what he is. And I'm coming around on Bill Simmons because Waz is now at the Ringer. I used to be a big Bill Simmons fan back in the day, and then I soured on him because as his culture cachet and criticism, you know, whatever. But what Weinstein is like a Bill Simmons, where like Bill Simmons will apply like friends metaphors to sports or vice versa, right? Like who's the like Steph Curry of like prestige drama, right? Like that's a Bill Simmons thing. This is what Eric Weinstein does too. It is and it's clever. I mean, it feels like meaning, and it feels like just by drawing these different references in, and it kind of is in a certain way. And I mean, to be honest, like I'm certain, to be charitable for a little bit, if you listen to like the portal or whatever, occasionally they'll use a metaphor that actually describes something that accurately in a way you feel is actually useful. But anyway, it's a limited utility, I think.
There's a whole group of charlatans that does that. What's his name? Malcolm Gladwell is a great example of somebody who could come up with like a metaphor that like might sound clever, like on the first reading. And then you think about it a second, it's like, okay, well, this is actually very much like leading me in a very particular way of thinking. Mm-hmm.
And just to fill up a book proposal. I mean, really.
Kind of entered my list of people to just like pay attention to.
So Eric Weinstein, kind of busts on the scene as just a random ass guest on Sam Harris's podcast. And he did a phenomenal job. That conversation is excellent. And his big contribution was fighting back against this wokeness. And so it was kind of like he was the Samuel L. Jackson character in the Avengers, going to different, different thinkers and trying to unite them. And he coined the term intellectual dark web, and he brought all these people to.
I'm sorry, that I haven't seen the Avengers, but I know that, I think, enough, that dynamic of Samuel Jackson going and say, hey, we got to do some fighting or something like that. That is so funny to me, especially like knowing that they actually disdain Brett and Eric, but like even, oh man, anyway.
I don't want to, we have a lot to get to in this, so I don't want to derail it by saying this, but I haven't seen the Avengers either, and I'm sure people in our audience have, and I don't want to make any kind of big statements about it, but it is funny how much like this kind of like right-wing group of folks, you know, kind of logic bros, like that is like a cornerstone for how they understand a lot of the world, is by comparing it to the Avengers.
It's like, what Harry Potter used to be, or still kind of is, for libs.
It's what Harry Potter was to like Warren liberals.
Yes, you
the
know,
Avengers
it's
is to, I don't know.
I mean, this is how far we've fallen from the days of John Milton,
race when it was scientist loving.
At least the text we used to draw everything from was the Bible that we all shared. Now it's like, you know, some people.
See how
do,
far society has fallen.
This is the fall
for Matt Lack here.
This is the fall. I'm going Tradcath or whatever. I actually don't follow that enough to even know what I'm saying. I was raised Catholic, but anyway, we'll continue.
Together, who were radically different and radically across the political spectrum. So like Ben Shapiro, Jordan Peterson, Sam Harris, Christina Hoff Sommers, Joe Rogan, Douglas Murray, etc. Eric then catapults his brother.
I wouldn't say that is also a radically wide spectrum there. I think, for instance, all those people, if you ask them certain questions, like, where do you think about like land reform in developing countries or Gaza, you might find certain consistency with regards to that.
Or phrenology.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to accuse all those people of phrenology, but, you know, you invite Sam Harris or Charles Murray in there.
Other Brett into the limelight as well. And this is because he was attacked by these woke activists at Evergreen. But I learned a lot from him. He was a super interesting guy. But over the last, like 6 months, they have just completely destroyed their public reputation. It is like a complete fucking meltdown. And it shows how corrosive conspiracy thinking can be.
And also taking on an identity as a contrarian. This, I think, is like a big part of it for me, is like identifying as someone who must be against whatever the current cultural norms
are. Yes, yes. Yeah, exactly. It's like reflexive contrarianism. And it's it's
nice.
It's really interesting because Eric had also been, for the last like 9 years, talking about having a grand unified theory of physics, which is a fucking ballsy thing to say. And if you're going to say something like that, and if you're going to make a public reputation out of having a grand unifying theory, like the... Whoever does this, so we need to set this up for the audience. So, grand unifying theory, TLDR, is that you have two.
This is where they're semi useful, because they're able to explain how. And for life of me, I don't know why it wasn't clear earlier to some people. And this is the case with the Weinsteins. People who know what they're talking about, looking into their claims about this stuff, saying, hey, wait a second, this is all flim-flam, and you're full of shit, and you actually don't deserve a Nobel Prize, nor do the two other siblings, probably, that you think for independent other projects. There's this guy who's on the Decoding the Gurus podcast that Eric Weinstein was saying was, like, harassing him and, like, saying all this crazy stuff about, like, how he's being unfairly, like, vigorous in his criticism of him. But you'll see why, like, that the criticism is valid, because these guys are charlatans.
Giant theories of physics, general relativity and quantum mechanics, and they're both basically our most well corroborated theories of physics that we have, but yet they don't agree with one another. They can't be made to cohere into a single theory, and so physicists are trying to come up with one theory to rule them all, the theory which unites the two.
And this has been going on since Einstein, right? So Einstein comes up with general relativity, quantum mechanics comes about shortly after, and then Einstein sort of makes it his life goal to unify these theories. So, you know, since Einstein, there have been brilliant physicists for a long time trying to unify these things, and no one has been successful. And okay, so this is like a very, very hard problem. Eric has claimed to have solved this problem.
The theory is called geometric unity. I think he literally said that if his theory is true, it would enable faster than light travel.
Oh, that, yeah, that's one thing. Yeah. So Eric shows up to Oxford, gives a talk about his purported theory of anything, which is like
theory of everything, not theory of anything.
At Oxford. This motherfucker gets a talk at Oxford. I mean, Jordan Peterson's also done that. I think a lot of, you know, shitty people have given talks at Oxford. There's an interesting one with Nixon, I believe. But, man, like, these guys, again, Eric Weinstein works for Peter Thiel, and his brother, like, had a bad experience that he immediately went and talked to Tucker Carlson about. I mean, like...
Yeah, I thought these guys were being silenced.
Yeah.
anything.
Well, it turns out to be a theory of goddamn anything.
So he gives this whiteboard talk, but then doesn't write a paper about it, right? Like, you know, if you claim you have a theory of everything, you should probably write it up and submit it somewhere, or at least put it on an open access server like the archive. so that people can like criticize it. And if it's right, that's fantastic. You know, we could have a theory of everything, which would be a massive breakthrough. Anyway, so I don't know if it was recently he started feeling pressure to actually produce this document. Like he started talking more and more about it. So for some subset of reasons, he decides to write up his theory and puts it online on April 1st of this year, right? Yeah, April 1st, 2021. I think immediately before that, there was a paper slash manuscript made available by two people, Tim Nguyen and Theo Paulia. And basically just showed there's like severe problems with this theory.
This scandal just gives us so much insight into human psychology, which we'll get to. But so he didn't release the paper through the peer-reviewed method, which is something I participate in, you participate in. If you're just in academia, you participate in the peer review. But he didn't do that. He released a flashy website where you can become a subscriber and you get access to his publication, which is not meant to be read by his peers. It's meant to be read by his fans. This is Eric's geometric unity. And you don't have to understand too much math because like the central contribution of...
We need to do this, David. You need to schematize a utopian socialism like pre-Marxists, and we can sell it to patrons like we only need 1,477 people.
One paragraph at a time.
Yeah, exactly.
Just slowly leaking it to them.
Geometric unity relies on this new mathematical object called the Shiab operator. And Shiab, S-H-I-A-B, stands for ship in a bottle. I have no idea what it does. But I know that if you're going to introduce something new, you have to be able to define it. And in Eric's work, he says that he forgot how to define this thing. This is laughable. This is laughable.
And this is the key to theory.
This is the core, like the keystone thing, which everything relies on. And he doesn't know how to fucking define it. And that, what the hell are you doing, man? Like, if you don't know how to define something, that's fine.
Yeah.
But then just don't go around bragging that you have a theory of everything, because any scrupulous mathematician or academic.
Is this amazing?
Holy shit, bro. Dude, that's like being stoned, right? It's just like, yo, I just figured it out. You know, you've been around somebody's like that. I just figured this out. It's like, what'd you figure out? It's like, I figured out everything. It's like, well, yeah. And it's like, oh shit, I forgot it.
The Shiab operator. I wonder if the Shiab operator was a victim of the distributed idea suppression complex. Have you heard about this?
Oh boy!
So this is the DISC, what he calls it, the distributed idea suppression complex. We're probably part of the DISC. We don't get uniforms. I would like some like totalitarian style uniforms, but that's what's keeping him from being recognized. Maybe it's what made him forget what the Shiab operator is. But, I mean, so these guys, we'll just listen to him laugh about it a little bit more and then zoom out a little bit here.
And he doesn't know how to fucking define it. And that, what the hell are you doing, man? Like, if you don't know how to define something, that's fine.
Yeah.
But then just don't go around bragging that you have a theory of everything, because any scrupulous mathematician or academic would not release a piece of entertainment on a website with a subscription service to get access to it. This is purely for his own self-aggrandizement, and because he's not speaking to peers, and he's not intending to speak to peers. He's intending to speak down to people who aren't capable of understanding what he's saying. And he's doing this fucking thing, which academics do sometimes, which is lord their intelligence over other people. And they use fancy words and convoluted language and intentional references, which they know the person they're speaking to won't understand, as a means of elevating their own status.
Oh, you know, another thing we need to bring up is one of the early Portal episodes was Eric having his brother on to talk about his brother's troubles in academia. So Brett purportedly, when he was early on in his like academic career, came up with like some principles, some biological principles having to do, it's had to do with biology. I'm not going to pretend to, I can't remember the details. But basically the claim in that episode is that someone won the Nobel Prize in biology with Brett's work, or at least very, very much building off Brett's work. And did not cite Brett, like did not give Brett any acknowledgement.
Yeah. So this is maybe a good time to shout out the Decoding the Gurus podcast, who has basically made it their public output to just go through each and every one of the Weinstein's claim and just dismantle them. And it's dirty work, but someone has to do it. Someone has to go into the weeds and look at every one of their goddamn claims and just show that it's misleading or yada yada. But so for listeners who want the details, which we are clearly not doing a great job of providing, go listen to them. But so there's something about Brett Weinstein having a brilliant idea and then having it stolen from someone who got the Nobel Prize. But the other part is that it has something to do with like mice telomeres.
Oh, there we go.
And the conclusion is that all medical research, which is based on mice, is not to be trusted. Yeah,
it can't generalize to humans because of some reason. Right. Yep.
So yep. I was like, okay, if this is true, I'm going to hear about it in the news eventually.
because medicines will start failing and people will start dying.
So, okay, so this is the key thing, right? So Eric is making these huge claims about physics. And Brett is making huge claims about biology, and both are saying they're not taken seriously by the mainstream establishment. Mm-hmm. And both have earned a decent amount of credibility and reputation by making a lot of sense on the subject of wokeness. So anyway, a bit more scene setting and opinionating and stuff,
I want
to
dive.
That's probably good. They don't get to the part, we won't get to the part where they say, you know, they contrast him unfavorably to Sam Harris. We've already kind of discussed that, but it's interesting to me because, like, to me that's clear, and it was clear very early, like even when the first Vox articles were coming out, you kick the tires on some of that stuff, and like again, like the physical intimidation stuff, not a fan of. But I also think like a guy who's becoming a pattern of like you're not basically anti-racism, I think that's more notable than like he voted for Bernie Sanders once. But anyway, to put all that aside, the disdain they have for people who are actually serious about these issues and physics, and I have a theory of everything. I mean, it's kind of a shock to me it gets this far to where guys, I think like these are smart guys. Like they understand smart in the sense of like informed about these science and technology issues. And that is something that I've taken a lot of interest in. I used to listen to like astronomy podcasts and shit like that. But if you stay in that realm and basically look for sort of like abstract rules with which to understand the world, as opposed to historicizing a little bit, I think it becomes a little bit easier to get maybe taken in by anti-wokeness charlatans like Jordan Peterson and Sam Harris.
I mean, they're waiting for you there, right? Like there's a whole like operation of like trying to put those people in front of folks who are interested and curious.
Yeah. And I mean, that's why I think it sucks. Like even fucking Joe Rogan, like there's all this curiosity out there that people want to devote a whole bunch of their time and attention to. And it gets sort of monopolized by these guys. Like they mentioned like Douglas Murray, man, the anti-Muslim, like, European dude. You think, like, your fucking cousin needs to, like, hear about Douglas Murray while he's just trying to hear about, like, how you take peyote in New Mexico? Like, no, that sucks. That's a fucking bad influence. It's what we're up against. But the good news is people will find the light after a certain amount of time, and you can't fool people forever.
I think that's true, and I hope it's true. I mean, the thing is, like, that media apparatus is so. I mean, I will say, like, you know, I'm 28 now, so it's been a decade since I was sort of swimming in those kind of just like, you know, when you're 17, 18, you're getting curious about the world and using the internet to find all these folks.
Yeah.
I do think that there's a lot more options for folks even than there were 10 years ago, if you get what I mean, for people who are like intellectually curious. I mean, for a while, especially like, I don't know, a lot of these like internet scenes, like just weren't fully developed, at least for people just trying to get into them, to be able to draw people in different directions. But beyond that, I mean, like, I think about the kind of stuff that they do. I think it's sort of related, but it's just been in my head this entire time. I'm thinking about Richard Dawkins, mm-hmm. right? And just like those two brothers, right, who have like some kind of expertise or experience in one field and start to get really famous for doing something else, right? Dawkins is, you know, I can't speak to his success as a scientist, as a biologist, as a zoologist. But from what I understand, it's, you know, significant. But he becomes really famous as being a very public and curmudgeonly atheist.
Yes.
And I remember buying a book of his essays when I was first starting to, you know, become an atheist myself. And he has this entire essay just sort of shitting on all the other fields of knowledge by saying that if aliens were to come to Earth, right, they wouldn't be too interested in learning about our Shakespeare or our Marx or our, you know, Hobbes or Beethoven.
Right,
they'd
right.
want to know who our Newtons were and who our Einsteins were. Like, when did this society discover this? When did this society discover that? And I remember at the time being like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, right? Like a scientific society that can be in space, you know, would you know, function in that kind of way. They would be logical. They would drop all of like the emotion and the attachment to the arts and social sciences. And now I look back as like, that's absolutely pure conjecture.
Yes.
On your part, right? You know what I mean? Like in your imagination, Richard Dawkins, like, yes, a society needs to go in the direction where we just drop everything else and just hold up people like yourself as like the smart folks who should be leading us instead of, you know, this full mosaic of life, different intellectual and artistic pursuits that makes society worth living in and in fact makes society better. Because I'll tell you one thing right now, that kind of science like only, and I sort of reject, and I'm talking about a lot of different things right now, but I reject that kind of separation that I think Dawkins and those people do, by the way, about like what the hard sciences are. But we're seeing more and more that without a society that takes very seriously the social questions and the political yes. questions and develops those arts and those sciences and those kind of strategies, probably won't get to the point of being able to being a space-faring species, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just like, it's funny to sort of, I don't know, like look back and see how they were trying to pull you in and how that can sort of work when you're still sort of being exposed to things for the first time. And then looking back and realize it's like, well, that was just a bunch of shit.
You know? Yeah. I mean, it's because it's very easy to understand or think of yourself looking at an alien civilization. I'm interested in a lot of things. I'm interested in their way of governance. I'm interested I'd be interested in their culture. I'd be particularly interested in their fucking sports. I gotta say that. We get some aliens dunking some, maybe we can, you know, get some intergalactic basketball going. Like the idea that it would just be science is that it is funny because I understand why they think it's true. Why like a Dawkins or a Neil deGrasse Tyson, like that just constantly shitting on like knowing shit any other way. Basically because again, like I think there's a baby brain behind that, honestly, a little bit. I think it's fear of confronting reality. Like, I think this is the same thing we're talking about with the skeptic community and how they really can't discuss the JFK assassination in any other way than focusing on, like, ballistics and things like that. No going into more interpretive things like CIA documents and, like, releases about, like, state... like espionage services and stuff like that, because that can't be tested in an easy way. That takes conjecture because it's fucking spycraft, right? And so they really have no applicability to that. And I think like there's something. I'll share this. Like I remember one time being freaked out. You know when you're keyed up after a horror movie? Mm-hmm. Something like that. And you kind of have that like fight or flight thing juicing through you. This was in undergrad. I put on Skeptoid, a skeptic podcast, and it honestly made me fucking relaxed. Like listening to a guy debunk the Dolotov Pass mystery. And it was just, it's like that, it's that like bite-sized debunking that I frankly don't have a whole lot of time for. It's semi-interesting when it comes onto it, a mystery, but because it avoids the exact things I'm talking about, the things that can't be, you know, easily debunked by, you know, citing the National Institute of Science and Technology, right?
Mm-hmm. No. I mean, there's a psychological like pleasure that you get from living in a world that can feel a bit irrational and confusing and dangerous and all of that, from things being presented to you in a kind of very, you know, here's the clear cut truth, right? All of the pain and anxiety that you're having in your life is actually because the secret cabal of a few financiers like is running everything, and here's like all of the signs of it, right? Like there's people enjoy that stuff. I mean, that's why there's 10,000 versions of different conspiracy theories, all pointed at addressing kind of like the generalized state of anxiety that we have. And I think it's worthwhile being able to point those folks out, because as the folks in that show were saying, you know, they do what folks like those guys, and I'll be careful with my words here, but you know, they use some of the skills that they have developed throughout their life. And if you're an academic on some level, being able to talk in a way that might be sort of confusing or maybe even impressive to, you know, the general public, can give you kind of an air of authority to sell a bunch of nonsense. I don't know. It's a profitable industry, and it's something that's as old as time, is people telling folks bedtime stories to their own advantage.
Yeah. That bedtime snake oil is really what a lot of this stuff is. Let's take some questions, shall we?
Sounds good.
I'm not even going to try on my phone, but I think I can open up Discord here. I want more of that. If you come across, because I don't really dabble in the skeptic, that was a lot. You know, you're talking about you're getting on the internet and finding a whole bunch of new people to follow for ideas and stuff like that. Like, there's like my first year, a couple years of college, I remember I was big into that like Dawkins atheist thing, point of inquiry, a lot of those like skeptic community or rational atheism sort of stuff.
Well, for me, man, I mean, it's almost more embarrassing. It's like, because I was living in a small town in South Carolina when I was, you know, senior, junior in high school. So it didn't really have a lot of places to go. So it was mainly like Barnes and Noble, which is just like, you know, now in hindsight should make me even more of an anti-capitalist, because like, you know, the direction that they take you, like the philosophy, you know, section is like two shelves, and half of it is like Christian philosophy, at least it was in the South, and the other half was just atheism, and then it was like Plato, right? It was just like, you know, there was no spectrum there at all.
Yeah, so that's,
you get introduced to those guys, and they get, you know, they get sort of pumped to you, just like as the recommended titles at Barnes and Noble, which was very influential in my way of thinking, I have to say, when I was younger.
No, that's a necessary corrective, because I feel like that I have some weird nostalgia for Barnes and Noble, because that was like, oh, like anytime we went near Barnes and Noble in Bismarck, and I wanted a book, my mom would get it for me. So like I fucking love, because my mom's a huge book reader too. But it could have been so much better if it was like not this.
Well, when I would come back because you know, for people who, I don't need to go through my whole biography, but I went to high school in South Carolina. But when I would come back to Austin in the summers, Book People, which is like our big local bookstore, was always just like an eye-opening experience of like all these different authors and ideas. But you know, throughout the, you know, the school year, essentially, you know, your Barnes and Noble experience really like Yeah. I don't know. It points you in a certain direction. And there was rough. I mean, a lot of like Confederate, like apologia, you know, a lot of like kind of crazy, Rush Limbaugh books being, I'm just talking about like when you come into like current affairs section or history right. section, yeah, yeah. like those are the books that are front center, like 30 of them stacked up to get you to pick up.
Glenn Beck going like this in front of the Constitution. Yeah,
Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, who's definitely never written a book. I mean, I know he's, yeah. I know he has books out there with his name on them, but I do not think he's written those.
Yeah. All right. Here's from Irish Liam. Vivek Chibber says that on the spectrum of altruism versus selfishness, socialists are on the extreme end of altruism and that this makes us freaks. How do you think socialists compare to the norm, and how much should we weight the self-interest of voters in our messaging? Well, I would have to see Vivek lay out his argument a little bit more, but I'm inclined typically to estimate highly people's altruism and empathy. I just think it's in our culture directed in ways that are serving of capitalists and unhelpful. But I, you know, I'd be interested to read more.
I mean, Vivek is great. I mean, I don't know the context either. Here, so I won't speak to it as much as like, I don't know. I feel like in the context of that, if I were how I would read it, Vivek has been on a big tear lately at sort of like criticizing, you know, the PMC, et cetera, and like the kind of upper middle class, college educated, like left. So I would imagine that that might be more what he's saying, but I don't know. I could be incorrect about that. I don't know. I think these things are pretty wide spectrums. I sort of reject, maybe this is just me, but like there's definitely a Brooklyn and a New York scene that you can talk a lot about, right? And I'm including like the socialist left, but also like all this PMC stuff. But I think when you start to zoom out and get out of those communities, those questions become a little bit less important. I don't know. Like maybe another way to think about it is like any community that you are a part of has problems within it. Do you know what I mean? Like any group, it could just be like this, the sports team that you like, are your fans like obnoxious or blah, 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 right? Any community that you've ever been in, members of that community, some of them will say, well, this is the problem with the community that I'm in. This is the problem with the social circle that I'm in, right? Et cetera, et cetera. And I think, you know, just like any other group, we do that on the left. That doesn't mean that there's not problems or things that are worth like sort of wrestling with. This is less necessary coming at Vivek, but that kind of like hyperfixation on the, PMC criticism that I think is starting to become a little bit too dominant on the left. I think, I don't know. I think there's like some of it that you can actually just like completely pull away from the politics or the philosophy of folks. And oftentimes you're talking a little bit more about people in your own community and surroundings.
Sorry about that.
Matt's just allergic to bullshit.
I know. Yeah. David, do you have any recommended readings or Marxist analyses on Taiwan's complicated history with China and the U.S.? That's a tough one. I would be interested if anybody does.
No, I'd be happy to hear, but I don't have one. I'm sorry, friend.
Edwin, Matt, why does the U.K. have so many prominent transphobes in visible media and political positions? Most people in the U.K. are nothing like Graham Linehan, J.K. Rowling, Jermaine Greer, etc. Well, all starts in the 1640s when Charles I is like, I want to spend money. And Parliament's like, no. And he's like, yeah, I'm gonna. And they're like, your head's going to be cut off. And no, I don't know. I don't know why that happens. The UK has weird cultural politics. Like, it's the sort of thing where they're advanced on us in certain ways. Like, I mean, Jeremy Corbyn's a tough person to say. But when he's like, I remember him just saying, like, somebody in London froze, a homeless person froze to death. And he made a point to, like, mention that, thinking of any fucking Democrat. Anyway. And then, yeah, why? I don't know. I don't know. That's, I guess this is a roundabout way to say, I have no idea why, but
it's because it's a perverted little island, man. Like, they collect stamps and shit there. Like, it's just, it's a weird place. I mean, don't get me wrong. I have good friends in the UK, and I'm bitter because one of my best friends just left the United States to go and live there, right? They're taking our best and our brightest. But boy, I have friends there, and like, just talking to them about food, man. I had some friends who were getting into grilling, and they were sending me some, I won't say the word barbecuing for what they're doing over there, but they sent me just like the grills that you can get for your backyard there. And it was some of the most, not only was it just like, oh, this isn't right, but it was like, this doesn't make any sense. Like, this is dangerous shit. And like, the food that you're cooking on, this is going to always turn out to be bad. And I don't know, man. UK is bizarre world for me in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough when, like, it's just such a financial center. I don't know. No, I mean, how did explain tie this back to transphobia? I don't know.
No, I mean, I'm just fucking around, yeah. Obviously. the transphobia stuff is like, also, it is a good reminder to Americans not to get all fucking red, white, and blue or anything like that. But, you know, a lot of the social politics here in the United States are, frankly, like much more advanced than they are in other parts of the world. I know it's not very vogue to say that, and it's not saying that we're in a utopia or anything like that.
Yeah.
But there are some things that we have just gotten a bit more advanced on. And obviously, like on issues like trans rights, it's nowhere near perfect at all. I mean, we're seeing horrible freakouts about all across the country. I think the big difference in the UK is that there's a leftist cohort of folks who are still radically and rabidly against trans rights, where that's like less in vogue here. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's some people who are smarter than us and more plugged in than Matt and I who could answer that question better, but
you know,
I don't know.
Kathleen Brown has a book, Anxious Patriarchs, Good Wives. It's Good Wives, Nasty Wenches, and Anxious Patriarchs. It's one Adolf Reed cited when we had him on TMBS. And that goes into the sort of Protestant, not only do they have a work ethic, they had a patriarchy ethic, and literally legalizing intersex folks back in that time, saying we're going to have to come in and determine whether you're male or female because this is relevant to our laws now.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's a great, great book. One of the all-timers, really. So I would, if people want to look more into that, that might be my recommendation there.
Yeah.
Edwin, if there was a Left Reckoning bingo board, what would the center free spot be? That is
Edwin's stumping us tonight.
I know, that's a tough question. I feel like I don't have the capacity for self-reflection to be honest with myself about what that might be at this point.
I'm sorry. I don't have that, but I need to find something for us for later. If you could ask another question. I have a funny video that I just need to show you, just comparing us to the Europeans and all of this shit.
Got an update from Joe Snuffy here.
Oh, nice.
So in this week's episode of Shipyard Labor Struggles, it turns out that I was understating the issue about falling wages for new hires. A friend who works in payroll confirmed that management is claiming they have to cut starting wages because hiring so many contractors is exploding our labor costs. But they also need more contractors because no one wants to work for us for $14 an hour as a tradesman, is in parentheses. When the payroll folks raise concerns about paying contractors 2 to 3 times what we make is wasting money, management's response is, why do you care? It's not your money. It baffles me how this place hasn't collapsed given how inept the management is here. They have lowered starting base pay for zero experience employees by $1 every 6 months for 2 years. My friends who were interested and got interviewed literally can't afford to take the job. Oh, and our annual cost of living adjustments will likely be at least 2% below CPI. It's insane. As far Jesus. As outside institutions achieving political change, the Rhode Island Political Cooperative just unveiled the 50 candidates they are backing for the state legislature and governor's race. They are aiming to seize control of both next year, and they have the track record for it. I can reach out if you want someone from RIPC. It is a good model for what you're always calling for. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, and I got to say, there seems to be some really exciting stuff going on in Rhode Island politically. We also had our friend Rebecca, patron, send us a message on that as well, and I've been meaning to get on that and do something with it. Really exciting for all of y'all. And sorry, Joe, about all the shit at work, man, but I'm happy that y'all are like, I don't know, I'm just happy to hear that y'all are sort of talking and finding some way out of it. I don't know how to, you know, what necessarily to do, but it's good to hear. Let me see.
I have this soundboard if you want. I'm going to.
Oh, soundboard would be great. I have this video that I just think is the funniest thing that I've seen in a long time, and I'm just trying to figure out how to pull it up for us.
Well, here's some if you want to. This stuff, it's not labeled here, but I'm just going to play some at random. We'll see what we think.
Jesus Christ. I put it in the wrong Discord.
Fuck all you people.
Okay.
know who in the African National Congress needs to hear this. Good luck. Wow, so I'm supposed to come out and help lead to an equal democracy in our country. Yikes. This is I, Nelson Mandela, from Robben Island.
Oh, gosh.
But the reason that I was struggling against the apartheid regime is so they would be so liberal as to pay for room and board of our prisoners.
That's really good.
It sounds so much like...
I know, I wouldn't know.
Oh, I see. The snowflakes are out this evening.
That's a good one. That's a keeper.
That is really good.
Also, Alex Jones secretly works for the communist cabal. But the point is I was never on unemployment insurance. Honestly, Sam, I get a headache actually trying to keep up. The globalists are in fear. The globalists want to play God. They are not God.
I don't know what that one is. Anyways.
Wow, that's pretty good.
That's from a Sam great. Goodman guest in the first
That's really show. Awesome. Well, that's hard to follow, but
yeah.
I do have something sort of insanely funny. And I know we have some more questions to get to, but as a little brain break, let me see if I can share my screen. I don't know if you've... Oh, can I do that? Or are you still sharing?
You can share screen.
Oh, this wait, let me... still sharing.
Oh, sorry. There we go.
This has nothing to do with anything. Maybe just that, you know, the Europeans are advanced on some things, but boy, oh boy, this is next level. You know Serge Gainsbourg, Matt? Have you seen this?
Serge
Gainsbourg,
you know who that is? Yeah, remind me. He's a French guy.
He's a French pop singer, really famous there. And this is a video of him just like the most, just sometimes when you do cross-cultural like comparisons, it's just wild to see. So this is him at a concert for him in his honor, right? Of a children's chorus singing his songs. And you'll see in a second why this is just so insane. He's crying, bro. You couldn't do that. I mean, for many reasons in the US, and probably for good reason. But I don't know. Just to go back to what's going on in the UK, it's like, I don't know. And it's hard to be able to do those kind of cross cultural things. I mean, you look at what's going on in France and it's just as nuts to me.
yeah.
I went through a hardcore Serge Gainsbourg phase in college, by the way.
There's one song I like by his daughter, Le Chat something, but I can't remember what it is in French, but interesting. I mean, that was as perplexing as anything. You know, when they say, look at this bizarre clip from Japanese TV.
I mean, it's just like, it's the kids smoking the fake cigarettes for me that just gets me every single time.
Insane.
When they just sort of hold it in front of their face a little bit than once in a while. All right, we got a couple more we can grab. Kowalski says, after listening to the climate discussion, I can't help but think that I have a market-oriented mindset when it comes to solutions. I've talked of my carbon sequestering idea many times here, and though I think there's validity to it, I can't help think that it wouldn't just eventually perpetuate the status quo issues of capital. This is giving me more soul searching than I expected. Being a sellout would be a lot easier. Well, I don't think you need to do too much soul searching.
Yeah.
I mean, these things are difficult. I mean, the thing is specifically with like carbon pricing and sequestering is that You know, if you give them an off ramp, they're going to take it, right? If you give them the kind of opportunity to continue polluting and, you know, just sort of put it somewhere else, either putting it somewhere else, being like literally trying to do sequestering or, you know, pricing, I don't know, they'll take it. And yeah. I think that that's the thing to be, you know, mindful of, not necessarily can.
Right. That's the thing is like the array of power, like it will determine the pudding. that you ultimately get. Kowalski also says, Dennis Prager's face and voice being exposed to the public has an inverse correlation with birth rates. JB Funk, Matt, Harry Potter book explain the world. Well, some do say that. I mean, really, you can explain the world with any text if you try hard enough. What's your all-time top five for in real life Space Jam? Now, that is a... I don't quite know how to take that question, I must say. Like, in real life Space Jam, meaning,
I mean, you could be having the boys from Warner Bros. Or maybe putting
some. So wait,
some...
is my freedom at stake from the Monstars, and I need to pick a starting five? That's how I'll take this. I'll pick Jonathan Isaac, Andrew Wiggins. No, I'm joking. Those are the ones who don't want to follow the mandate. No, I'll take. I mean, look. Currently, I take LeBron. Steph, let's go with Embiid, Bradley Beal, and Paul George. There, I mean that's fine. They could probably quibble with a few of those, but I don't know if that's what you're asking. But
it's pretty good.
Champagne coming east. So why is Matt wearing a Blazers cap? One, because I like Portland Trail Blazers. Well, especially their player Damian Lillard. I like CJ McCollum too, but Lillard's really my guy.
Is Lillard going to stay there?
I don't think he should. Yeah. I don't want to upset our Portland followers, but I was a Kevin Garnett fan, and he wasted a lot of his fucking time in Minnesota when he could have been, and he ultimately did go win a ring. And it would be a shame to me if Lillard. Because they're just not, they're not going to be able to surround him with people that are going to do anything better than they've been doing. I want to see him on the Clippers, frankly. But I'm also wearing the Blazers hat because even when Lillard goes to the Clippers, it has the double entendre about weed smoking.
That's very true.
Follow-up question. Who is better at real basketball among TMBS crew, Michael included? Well, Michael would not have
yeah. Just threw him under the bus immediately.
I mean, no, I'm sorry.
I was thinking the exact same thing. I mean, Michael did not play sports at all, nor follow them. So.
No,
I mean,
like
tennis,
he was
tennis. I shouldn't say sports.
Exactly.
Like, I have such like an American boy brain for sports. It's like,
yeah, he whipped me in tennis, and he might be okay at soccer because he's in good shape. But as far as like. Team sports. I don't think he participated.
Yeah, Michael probably. I mean, especially my weight when we were in Brooklyn. Michael could probably run around me a few times on the basketball court. I'm a good rebounder. I have a trash shot though. I need someone to feed the rock to.
Like, how trash is it? Is it trash? Like, you're going to miss several layups in a row?
No, I mean, I can make layups for sure. But okay, you know.
See, like I had like decent skill, but I haven't shot a basketball in like a decade, literally now.
I was definitely too nervous to go. You and I had talked about, I think, a couple of times in Brooklyn shooting around, but it was always too insane. Because I was always nervous about going to the courts around there because people are really good. Yeah. There's a court near me here, and I would love to just go and be able to just like work on my shot and get back into the rhythm because I'd love to play a little basketball.
Yeah.
But man, the guys who play there are just really fucking good. And they're also just like massive and super strong. So
like guys, yeah, exactly. Guys
very unlikely that I'm going to be able to pick up the sport.
Yeah. I mean, I want to do it at like a rec league where you can sort of like grade. I'll do the moderate league. I don't want to go with the guys who like want to be semi-professionals. Like, I'm not that. I want to hit these corner threes and like jog back on defense. I don't want to be like, you know, have my ankles broken because the guy wants to have an Instagram video.
Dude, have you ever listened to your Kickstarter Sucks episode?
Yes. Oh my god, where Jesse
recaps his like rec league playing.
Man, I wonder if somebody's pulled those for YouTube because I want to go back, but it'd be very difficult to find those in the back catalog. Yeah. Final comment here from Okowalski. The free space on LR Bingo is the commons. I mean, I certainly like
there
that.
There you go.
That, I mean, that's poetic, and we do mention it a lot. David, I think you want to say before we dip.
No, just look out for us on Sunday. I'm really looking forward to that conversation.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that too, folks. And we will see you then.
We should have gone out with the Serge Gainsbourg.